It has been almost a year since the U.S. Supreme Court struck down race-conscious college admissions. It has prompted a flurry of challenges to diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at companies. And Texas and Florida have tried to dismantle DEI programs at public universities. Many of these lawsuits have been filed by political conservatives. Let's talk now to Olatunde Johnson. She's professor at Columbia Law School, studying discrimination law and constitutional law. Professor, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
These efforts we're seeing, of course, follow the Supreme Court's ruling against college affirmative action programs. Is there a direct line legally between that ruling and the challenges we're seeing to diversity programs at companies, at universities?
There isn't a direct line legally. I think what you would say is that people are taking the opinion and using it to extend to workplaces. That decision in the Harvard case, UNC case, was about education, not workplaces. It also made clear that you could continue affirmative action for reasons that weren't about diversity. You know, so you can remedy past discrimination or you can deal with present discrimination, and most workplace programs are for that purpose. Another thing to point out is that most workplaces are private. While the programs in Harvard and UNC were either about public programs, in the case of University of North Carolina, or programs that were receiving federal funds. That all said, there's language in the Harvard case that litigants are using, and these are people who are opposed to affirmative action generally, and immediately after the decision started saying this affects workplaces. It affects DEI programs in workplaces.
Well, one of those persons behind these lawsuits, many people know the name Edward Blum. He was behind this affirmative action case you're talking about. And as far as challenging some workplace programs, Blum cites a section of the Civil Rights Act of 1866 in his argument. Just for the rest of us, help us understand his argument.
Yeah, so this is only one of a number of different challenges, but it's interesting you pointed out that particular one. I think a case that's gotten a lot of attention is this Fearless Fund case against a small company that said, you know, less than 1% of the venture capital funding is going to Black women, and so we're going to set up a fund just for Black women. And so Ed Blum, as you mentioned, is using a civil rights statute that was passed after the Civil War. It actually has race right in the words of it. It says that it is intended to give the same civil rights to Black people as it's as white people enjoy. Nevertheless, the argument is that this prevents discrimination on the basis of race in contracting programs. And so the importance of it in general is that it reaches private employers. It's also absolutely true that you can use this statute to prevent racial discrimination. In fact, African Americans and other groups have long used it to say that you can't discriminate in the making of contracts. So it's an important civil rights statute to get at discrimination in the private sector. So they're just using this to say, anytime you have race, like a racial fellowship, and maybe even something like a DEI program, that discriminates against white citizens. And that's the nature of the legal challenges.
Yeah. Now, as we've been seeing these lawsuits against corporate diversity, DEI programs, are we seeing a pushback in the other direction? Could we see supporters of these programs file suit arguing that they're facing discrimination and an uneven playing field?
Yeah, I think we're absolutely going to see more of that. I mean, if we want to back up and really understand the origin of these DEI programs, I think many people think of them as something that just sprung up 2 or 3 years ago. But their roots are actually in the late 60s and 70s. When you pass the fair employment provisions that say you can't discriminate on the basis of race or sex. As a result of that, Congress also said, hey, we don't want to wait for lawsuits to arrive. We want to create inclusive workplaces at the front end. And some of that is going to involve training to make sure that there is no discrimination in the workplace, strategies to make sure workers can get along. This is also then required by the Disability Act that says you have to take reasonable accommodations. The point is that there was an encouragement by Congress of saying, take these proactive steps. And in fact, in the area of racial and sexual harassment, it's required that you adopt policies to prevent racial and sexual harassment. So in answer to your question, I really see that as these programs face challenge from conservative groups, that you're increasingly going to see civil rights groups who want to advance race and gender and disability inclusion say, hey, the baseline is unequal itself, and we need to identify those discriminatory practices and challenge them.
So as these lawsuits play out, what are you seeing happening in the business world? I'm certainly reading about what some consider a chilling effect, that some large companies have been changing or getting rid of their diversity fellowship programs, their hiring goals, their anti-bias training. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly a danger that that can happen. The programs that are most vulnerable to challenge that we have already seen some courts strike down are those that use what we call racial classification. So they actually say race or gender is a goal. Those programs are going to be targeted first. It's a pretty big leap to get to that from there to the idea of broadly speaking, anti-bias training violates the law. There was really no basis for that. And as I've suggested, in fact, it may be the opposite, that you're risking lawsuits from women, people of color, people with disabilities, if you don't have anti-bias training. But I'm sure a lot of workplaces are reviewing their programs. They're trying to make sure that they can continue to advance diversity and inclusion, but at the same time, they don't want to risk legal lawsuits. I'm also seeing a lot of institutions say, this is important to us because we think that inclusion is a value that's consistent with our company's value. We also think that we get more innovative workforce if we are actually inclusive, and we want people to be able to work together in this workplace.
Professor Johnson, before we let you go, you, of course, study the Constitution, and I wonder what these challenges to DEI programs, do they tell you something about how the Constitution is being interpreted today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a key question is about the 14th Amendment. Is this about colorblindness or is this about getting rid of racial and gender inequality? That question about the meaning of the 14th Amendment is at the heart of many of these contestations. And I think we're going to see how that is resolved.
We've been talking to Olatunde Johnson, professor at Columbia Law School, where she studies social justice and constitutional law. Professor, thanks again for talking to us. Appreciate the time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
And tomorrow we'll speak to a college president about the impact she's seeing in the admissions process in the first admission season since that Supreme Court ruling.